broadcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, August 19th, 2009, the only August 19th, 2009 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this Wednesday night. Glad to have you along for the live edition of GKO. And talking to you and talking to Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution from the home offices in Houston, Texas. A bedridden Michael Williams. Michael!
Glenn, good evening.
Sorry to hear that you are fighting off some illness. And see, I think all your travel caught up with you.
I think so. Those airplane demons got off the plane with me, I think. So.
Clearly did not anoint enough of the aircraft or the other places that you were with enough oil.
Yes, evidently.
So, Mike, of course, the last time we talked last week was just back from Alaska, but in the interim, you were off to Hoosierland, to Indiana, and had a weekend at Grant Miller's again. And
Yes, I did. That was very good. The last time I was there, these were folks that had come to understand of the redemption of the world. It's so amazing the different starting places that people have. But kind of their starting place was the redemption of the world, and they wanted me to teach on that to where that, I could solidify what they understood to be the truth. So all of the sessions that I did a couple of months ago were all on the reality of the redemption of the world. And I told them this time, we need to go back and get some underpinnings of the gospel there. So I taught on the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace during the sessions, which it's just so amazing that those subjects for me never, ever have gotten old. And even the material that I cover for the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace, even though we cover a lot of the same material, it's amazing how those the emphasis and the enlightenment on these chapters and these verses in context are different, even though saying the same thing every time. But there's just such a different emphasis on some things, and verses that come into context in a much greater way than what I've been able to see them ever before. So,
what are you thinking of in particular? What's coming to your mind as you're thinking about those verses?
Well, I honestly can't think of any of them right now. I just remember that during the sessions there were things that came out. And if my head were not so clogged, I might be able to remember something. Between that and the meds, I'm not sure. I'm doing good to remember what I taught on, much less specifics.
All right, well, we're going to appeal to our live listeners tonight to help Michael along, carry him along a little bit. The toll-free number is 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. If you're listening on Wednesday night and it's a little after 9 o'clock on the east coast of the United States of America, please call us and let us hear from you tonight, your questions, your comments, your insights. What?
Yeah, I said yeah, because, there's folks we haven't heard from in a long time, such as Richard Mull out in California. And Richard, if you're listening, call in, or we're going to bill your a contribution from your credit card twice this month. So we ought to have that. We ought to have a night where that we announce that everybody that does their monthly pledge on their credit card, that unless we hear from them, we're going to double it.
Michael, clearly,
I think the meds are talking.
From the Benadryl that he's taking.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is just fine. But we do want to hear from whether you are a first-time caller or a regular. We want to hear from you tonight, and we always need that first caller to step up to the plate at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. And if you're listening live or on the archive, you can always email us your questions and comments to webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Webcast@gospelrevolution.com. We got this nice email from James Gustafson in Canada. He says, Glenn and Mike, I just want to let you know that I value these sessions, and the last several have had great value to me. I've been coasting for years, and hearing the gospel has given me peacefulness. I have really stayed away from confrontation in the past, but recently I have had several acquaintances write me long religious messages expecting responses I am considering. I talked to you only briefly about how the webcast works, and I hope they are able to continue even though the world seems dead. You are a great interviewer with good information. And that's from our buddy James Gustafson.
Yeah, that James is a good buddy. He's been a personal friend. My goodness, going back almost 30 years now. It's just absolutely ridiculous. I can't believe James is that old, you know. But James just keeps getting older. I don't know what's happening to him. But no, our children that, in fact, my family went up with me, and my children were, you know, they were like 5, 6, or 7 years old, right in there, and James's kids were about the same, and we both have children that I know my kids are in their early 30s and approaching mid 30s now. So it's like, man, this has been going on a while. But he's been a dear friend and also a wonderful partner in the gospel. And just as his letter reflects, James is a very reflective man, and he loves meditating on the gospel and he is very non-confrontational. But boy, I tell you, he's has over the last few years getting very strong in the gospel, and certainly stands up to says what he thinks and believes. That's for sure. So,
Michael, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just got an email, Sean, that people are not able to hear the webcast, and I just went to the webcast page, and it's not sending it over to the. To the webcast. I think we were still webcasting on the server room. Alrighty then. We are back online for those that are listening live. Hopefully you stayed with us. And for those that are on the archive, you wouldn't notice the difference. We had some technical difficulties, but we're back online and glad to be back. Thank you, Sean, for all your hard work and encouraging the folks that stayed with us to call us at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. And so where were we, Michael?
We were talking about James Gustafson and about how long I've known James and his understanding in the gospel and being a friend to the ministry, and I think that's what we were talking about. So we'd just taken the email from him.
We want to thank James for that email. I want to encourage you folks to email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com any questions or comments that you might have. So, Michael, I was watching a documentary on a particular cult in, I believe it was in Texas, but it was about a guy who had predicted the end of the world. It was pretty classic, but the thing that struck me about it, he had predicted that October 31st, I believe 2007, was going to be the last day of life on the planet, or at least that his group was going to be changed in an instant. And it struck me, as I listened to it, just how in line his comments were with so many of the other, people who, within the so-called Christian community about the end of the world and things like that. It's amazing how these things are so consistent, and how cultish even what would be considered mainline Christianity can be, especially when it comes to the end of the world.
Yeah, and that doctrine seems, like you said, it transcends religions, especially denominations within Christianity, but it also transcends religions around the world. And they get quite emphatic about it, and it always is, I suppose, a huge disappointment. As I think back on it, the only one that I got caught up in was probably the first one that I remembered participating in, and I believe that it was 1972 that was one of the dates that had gone out, and I'm not sure that I can't remember now whether or not I totally bought into it or not, but I know ever since then, even before I understood the gospel, and especially after I learned the gospel of peace, even though I didn't have any of these, any of the ability to read a lot of the Bible and the scriptures in context, the gospel of peace was so strong in me, even though I had no answers for most of the other things, and I just didn't talk about them. But the gospel of peace and the fact that God declared peace with the entire world was so paramount in my life after 1983 that my entire existence, as far as my belief system about the end times and what was going to happen, was certainly challenged to a great degree. I didn't challenge any of it actually happening. I just knew that there could not be, Glenn, I knew that there could not be any wrath, anger, or judgment coming from God, because the gospel of peace states emphatically in Isaiah that once God declares this covenant of peace, which is what the prophets foretold it to be, he says, "And my covenant of peace shall not be removed." And very clearly makes it a reality to us that God has said that after the new covenant would be established, that he would not be angry nor rebuke anyone, and that the covenant of his peace would last forever. So I knew as far as end time doctrine, I wasn't sure whether there was going to be a rapture or not. But the one thing that I certainly resolved was that anything that was going to be happening as far as destruction on this planet on a personal level or a family level or a nation Nations that any type of tragedy that was going to take place, that it certainly was not going to be at the hand of God, because the prophets foretold. It says, great distresses on the earth, and the next line after he makes that comment, he says, "But not by me, saith the Lord." And that prophecy of the scriptures in Isaiah, I think it is chapter 58. I wouldn't stake my life on it, but through most of that chapter, but making it very clear that the covenant of peace would never be removed. And he said, many shall gather together against you, but not by me, saith the Lord. And he says, thou shalt be far from terror. And the terror that is spoken of is speaking directly about the terror of the Lord. Thou shalt not, no terror shall come near thee and at all. So I just knew from the gospel of peace that there was something wrong with these end time doctrines. And then, of course, by the time we got down to 1988 and 88 reasons why Jesus is coming back in 88, I knew it wasn't going to happen. And the completed work of the cross was growing in my heart and in my mind and my understanding of it, to the point where that I was making very bold statements and challenging people to hold either me or my evangelical contemporaries accountable, because I was saying it absolutely is not going to happen, that the end of the world is not coming in 1988. And I think that date was in October sometime also. The basics, which, you know, I was saying that we went back to the basics of the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace. The gospel of peace and the gospel of grace are both so powerful, being the gospel in and of itself, that it challenges all of these old doctrines, and especially these that you're talking about, these judgment days and end of the world. Especially seeing that the end of the world doesn't even mean end of the planet in the text that it's used, nor in the Greek. It comes up in Matthew chapter 24. And even if you just read it in context, you would have to know that the end of the world, the question that they ask, had nothing to do, because Jesus was only talking about the religious system, which they were very much enamored with. Uh-huh. And when Jesus said, this is all going to come to an end, they asked him, well, tell us, when is the end of the world? They had no concept in their head as they were having this discussion with Jesus that they were asking about an end of the world. They were just amazed that he was saying Judaism was going to end. And he was literally saying that the entire practice of Judaism would come to a halt, and they wanted to know when. So all of those doctrines of end time, certainly by the simplicity and the power of the gospel of peace, number one, and also the gospel of grace, it just eliminates them. Right. And I encourage anyone that anytime somebody tells you that the end of the world is coming, say, well, let's make a bet on it. And if you've got $1 billion, please, or if the other person has $1 billion, please get them to bet with you their money. It is the surest bet you will ever, 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 ever make on the face of this planet, is that the end of the world is upon us. Because it is not upon us. It's not coming. There is no judgment day left. The judgment that God had to mete out for the entire human race went upon the cross, and it's about time we stop insulting the work of the cross by making these claims or even a teaching of the end of the world. We need to respect the cross and the work of the cross, and just come to grips with the fact we're here, and it is not going to be destroyed by God. And any destruction that takes place on this planet will be by our own hands, certainly not by God's, or by the weather, which is not a judgment of God, and it is not a work of the devil either. It's just the weather.
Right. 1-800-436-3260. This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution talking about the end times. And we have our first caller tonight from Adelanto, California, John Clark. John!
Hey, Glenn and Mike, how are you guys doing?
We're doing wonderfully. Am I pronouncing
all right. Hey, it's interesting what Mike was talking about, because that's exactly the first message he gave to me, late 80s, early 90s, was God is not mad at us anymore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I remember clearly. I think it was at the Marquis Hotel down in Palm Springs.
Is that right? My goodness.
Yeah.
Well,
I think my father,
they,
I think he recorded it. He was a cassette maniac. He used to record everything you said.
What town are you from?
Well, I'm in Adelanto where I work, but I live in Victorville.
That's
in California, out in the desert.
Oh, very
dry.
Good. So you were there at the Marriott for those the meetings that I did there.
It might have been the Marriott, yeah. It was down in Palm Springs area.
Was I with anyone, or was I by myself?
I think you might have had a friend with you, but it was, you know, late 80s, early 90s. I brought a couple down from Victorville with us, my wife and I.
Who was your pastor in Victorville, John?
Pardon?
Who was your pastor in Victorville?
There was none there at that time. The only person I knew in Palm Springs was Jeff Walker. You probably remember him.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. My father-in-law was going there for a while, and we used to go by there once in a while. He did all the taping for them. So I don't know if he ever went to Jeff Walker back in the early 80s.
Yeah, I used to speak for Jeff Walker there on Bob Hope Drive.
Right.
It was.
And my father-in-law cooked a turkey for you. He was always smoking
turkeys.
Oh, is that
right?
Yeah. Chris Van Tato.
Wow. My goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I spoke there several times, and it seemed that the gospel was being embraced, but when it started impeding on the money side of it, I think that's when I had my last invitation there at the church.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Anyways, it's my birthday today, so I wanted to celebrate by talking to you guys.
Oh, happy birthday.
Well, happy birthday, John.
Well, thanks. I've gotten more birthday wishes this year than ever.
Well, that's awesome. May we ask which one it is?
54. I'm just below you a little bit.
Oh, you're a young man.
Yeah. Anyways, I was talking to my daughter this morning, or last night sometime, and I was calculating it out that there's really only 22 books of Scripture that we have to study. We can just put the rest aside. We just spend a lot less time in Scripture study.
That's very true.
That's pretty exciting, because there's so much other stuff that we can kind of skip over and just get down to the brass tacks of what all came to pass 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, that is good news. It is amazing how limited that what Jesus and all of the disciples referred to and agreed upon being the Scriptures, being the Law, the Psalms, and the Prophets. So you went through and counted them, and there's 24 of them.
22 of them, I think.
22 of them. Yeah,
yeah, that's it.
Real short. Sure. I wonder how many letters in the New Testament are applicable to the gospel as well. I mean, there's a lot of just...
Well, the ones that say grace and peace in the end. Because Peter, James, and John, they never used the words grace and peace at the end. That's why Revelation is in question, that Paul might have been writing it as an allegory, because it says grace and peace at the end.
Right.
So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so, it would certainly be very Paul-like to speak in those terms, for sure.
Yeah, except for the last chapter where he says the tabernacles of God are with men, the next to last chapter, because that's us. We're the tabernacles of God.
Yes.
He finally got down to the truth.
Yeah.
After passing over all the judgment that already happened.
Yes, amen, for sure.
Anyways.
Yeah, so you've been continuing to obviously listen and grow in the gospel since the 80s?
Well, I kind of was on the back burner for a while, and we were actually in a Baptist church, and I was invited to do the Bible study a few weeks, and people got really mad when I started to tell them there's no hell anymore, and judgment of God is all over, and oh, man, it was a couple of people really got violent. And so now we just go to Episcopal Mission. It's just real mellow and just fellowship for fun there, you know, and it's real peaceful.
Nice
how
to
long
have
ago
a mellow
was that,
place.
John? How long ago was that you were teaching at a Baptist church?
That was between a year and a half ago and 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I got these epiphanies and revelations on stuff, and it's just like, oh, my God, I got back to the gospel, and it's like, ah!
It's amazing, Michael, that religious folks respond to the message of grace the same way that they did in the Bible days.
Mm-hmm.
It really is true, and the anger is amazing, and the violence, I mean, it... you know, you would think of all of the emotional responses you'd get from somebody telling them that all judgment had come upon the cross and there was no more, but you would not think that anger and violence would be one of them.
Yeah. Well, some of them said, oh, I'd like to believe that. Well, that'd be nice if we could believe that everybody's righteous, holy, and perfect. You know, that'd be neat.
That would be neat.
Yeah. I said, try it. Think about it.
Yes. Pretend it's true for a while. You know,
yeah.
I did that again with some folks that I met up in Alaska, actually on the Prince William Sound cruise that I was on, and you know, struck up a conversation with this young couple. And by the end of it, they were certainly hearing the gospel and that the entire world was righteous. And I told them, I said, you know, I said, don't try to figure it out. Don't try to even figure out, even if you believe it. I said, just try it on for size and see how it fits for a week.
Yeah, really.
And just when you see somebody, you know, the taxi cab driver, just let it be in your mind that they are holy and righteous. And if you see a prostitute on the street, just let your mind embrace the fact that prostitute is holy and righteous before God because of the cross. Anytime I've done that and people have taken me up on the challenge that they've actually exercised their conscience toward righteousness, the impact for over a week has been absolutely amazing, just to exercise that for 1 week. And I remember the first time I did it, I made sure that we weren't going to be endangering anybody as far as eternal punishment for not accepting the gospel, because I wanted to make sure that that if there was anybody who was out there preaching and leading people to the Lord, that, you know, just in case I was wrong, that we wouldn't be endangering anybody. So the group of believers that I was in front of when I taught this first time, I asked them, I said, okay, how many of you here have led somebody to the Lord yesterday? Nobody raised their hand. Okay, what about last week? Nobody raised their hand. Okay, over the last year, okay, nobody raised their hand. And I told them at that point, I said, you know, I'm not going to embarrass anybody anymore. I said, let's just assume that it's a safe bet that nobody's going to witness to anybody next week. So we're safe with this little practice. And just start pretending and just hold it in your conscience and your thoughts that everybody you meet is righteous and holy. And the response that we got from that was just very remarkable. So we just gave that same challenge to a young couple from, actually from Austin, Texas. And I need to get a follow-up report as to what that's done.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, thank you so much for participating and for your insight. It was great, and happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much, and talk to you again sometime.
Birthday again, John. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, and bye-bye.
There's John Clark from California with some really good insights. And it's very reassuring, Michael, to know that the gospel is having its way and its intended effect and the kind of impact that it's having on people worldwide.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, just like with John's call and from a meeting back in the 80s, and he heard the gospel of peace the first time. And it really is the gospel of peace is, you know, that's the reason I was saying, and hasn't it been true, Glenn? Goodness, I've had, and I've asked people over the years, you know, if I were to teach something, where would, that was like the message that people, everybody should hear, as I've asked that over the last several years, everybody has had a different answer. For those who came by the way that that I did, they always say the gospel of peace. And to those who the very first tape series that they heard was the redemption of the world, they emphatically say, oh no, don't start there. Just go ahead and give them the full truth of the redemption of the world. And then go from there. But everybody has said something different, which has been, which to me is interesting, because if it's the gospel, you can start anywhere. And that truth has such a domino effect. Any one of the truths of the gospel will lead to the other truths of the gospel. They never, if you emphatically believe the gospel of peace, it will lead to all the other understandings of the gospel. If you believe the gospel of grace, if you believe that sin has been forgiven once and for all, if you believe that everybody's been redeemed, if you believe that the end of the world is an accomplished work of the cross, if you believe there is no judgment coming anymore, any one of those things, any one of them that you believe emphatically will lead to the other truths that are part and parcel of what we know of as the good news. It's just a domino effect, and I've really enjoyed watching it. It's been amazing, though, to watch people who embrace a gospel truth, but bring it to a halt just before the conclusion of it in their thinking. And those people don't get that domino effect. They hang on to all of their old ideas and religious perceptions, and they really don't get anywhere. But any one of the ingredients, any ingredient of the gospel that is understood, any ingredient of the gospel that is understood to its ultimate will ultimately lead to all of the truth of the gospel.
And this is the Gospel Revolution webcast, Glenn Klein Online. We do have the phone line available for you right now with about 20 minutes left to go in the live show. If you're listening right now, and it's about 20 minutes before the hour of 10 o'clock on the East Coast, the line is waiting for you. We want to hear from you at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran waiting in studio to take your call. And we do want to hear from you on John Clark's birthday, as well as many other people's birthday today as well. So in the last 24 hours, Michael, we had a couple of well-known news people pass away, including Don Hewitt, the longtime producer of 60 Minutes on CBS in the United States, and Robert Novak, the famed columnist and reporter, commentator, who was involved in the Valerie Plame controversy. What happened to those guys when they passed away?
Well, I don't know what they believed, but I know what God believed. I know what Jesus believed. And Jesus believed these people were righteous and holy. And my understanding is that righteous and holy people, now only people declared by God to be righteous and holy, have eternal life in the presence of God. So since that's God's view and opinion, you know, it's amazing that I don't even have to know whether they were Catholic or Baptist or atheist or anything at all. Don't need to know their race. Don't need to know what they stood for, because it's not what they stood for. It's what Jesus stood for. It's the stand and the sacrifice that Jesus made that makes the difference in eternity for every living, breathing soul on the face of this earth. So we have great confidence that Mr. Novak and Mr. Hewitt, whatever eternal life after this life is over with, they have it. And they went immediately into the presence of God. And I'm sure that their reporting skills are feeling very weak compared to the report of the gospel that they have now received in its entirety.
You know, I remember back in the day when we were evangelicalism and somebody would pass away like that, I would always wonder, you know, if God gave them a last chance or whatnot. And it's just great not to have to think that way anymore.
I can't even think about thinking that way anymore, Glenn. It is so washed from my consciousness. I almost wish that I could feel what that felt like, because I even though I am highly motivated to share the gospel, I know that that feeling was a terrible feeling, whether it's about family members or anyone else, and especially people close to my life, and having to wonder, you know, if they knew the Lord, if they had become believers, if they were really Christians. But it was amazing that everybody that I knew, no matter what they died of, in or the condition of their life, drunk, car wrecks, no matter what it was, somehow we always resolved that they had made a confession of faith. It's amazing how minimal the requirements were after they died, and the requirements before you die are unattainable. And but the requirements seem to drop drastically after somebody passes, and we want to be gracious to them, but we think that, oh yes, I seem to remember a time when they actually went into church, and I just know that during that time they believed on the Lord, and so I'm sure they're in heaven, because the thought of the hell that we had preached, that somebody was actually there, that was just inconceivable. Even though we accepted it as reality, it really was not consciously conceivable, that's for sure.
1-800-436-3260. We're asking you that if you're listening live right now, and it's Wednesday night, and about 9:45 on the East Coast, you do call us. We want to hear from you tonight. You heard the great contribution that John Clark's call made. We want to hear from you with your contribution at 1-800-436-3260. Not a financial contribution we're asking tonight, although we'll never turn that down. We're asking for your insights, your comments, your questions at 1-800-436-3260. I was watching our boy Joseph Prince on his television show the other day, and he was teaching his version of the gospel of peace and tying it into how that provision, as far as financially and physically, that you can only receive it when you receive your sinless nature from God. And it was amazing to me how perverted he was presenting the gospel. Here's a guy who was under your direct tutelage for quite a while and has taken that a message, what he calls radical grace, and has completely tied it into the gospel of prosperity, the so-called gospel of prosperity. And it was really nauseating.
Yeah, you know, it was amazing because I certainly understand that when I added the understanding of grace that I had and the gospel of peace to the Word of Faith movement, you talk about a skyrocketing jet that I was on. Oh, my gosh, because these people were receiving some relief from their performance-oriented lives and by the ministry of grace and peace. But they still were clinging to those old doctrines. And again, you know, obviously, you know, our friend Mr. Prince has never totally grasped the gospel because you just cannot. You just cannot use it to do something else other than it just be the gospel. And I remember when I was I switched the giving from tithing to doing it by grace, and that of course I said by grace your tithe will always go up. You will always give more than 10% under grace. And giving room for grace to not judge you in any direction, whether your tithe or your giving went up or down, was a little bit more in coming through clearly, but it did. So I certainly understand the temptation to use the grace of God for financial gain, especially around a group of people such as the Word of Faith movement, because you're offering them the only relief they've had from the Copelands and the Hagans and many others that go down the list that is complete works oriented for healing and all of these things, even though all of these families have gone through all of these things, while telling us that these things would never happen to us if we practiced these doctrines and these beliefs. And it's just the situations in their lives have been hidden from public eye.
You know, one thing that you mentioned earlier about when you first were preaching the gospel of grace in evangelical setting, I experienced the same thing at our church here in the Tampa Bay area. It took off. I mean, people were so excited about it.
Yeah.
And then as you stay with it, and people learn that they do not have to tithe in order to be blessed by God financially or be healed or what have you, it starts the weaning process.
Yes, it does.
And then it starts affecting the attendance. It seems to be that in the same way when Jesus was on the earth, is that this message that brings freedom into people's lives literally empties out religious institutions.
Yes, it absolutely does. And even the ministry of Jesus himself, I mean, he left this world with no disciples. And but his ministry was absolutely a success. He left this world with no followers. And people have asked me, you know, about my seeing the success and the mark of the ministry that I've done while on this planet. And I've said for at least a couple of decades, maybe longer, that the mark of my success will be if I have no followers when I leave this life. And and everybody's always profoundly affected by that response But they know it's true, that a true ministry would honestly leave you with no followers.
Why is that?
Because of freedom. Freedom does not create a system for people to attach themselves to one human being or any one ministry. And I'll guarantee you that all of the people who support and are involved in the ministry or anything that we do at all, it is out of a desire for others to receive this freedom. Nobody gives so they can be blessed. Nobody gives because it's going to benefit them in any way. We can't do any, we do nothing, and we cannot do anything special or extra for anybody who gives or supports this this effort. It truly is the purest type of giving, as far as for ministry sake is concerned, that someone could do, because they are told in advance it is not going to benefit them at all in the eyes of God, and that, you know, it's a great thing to follow your heart, and giving is certainly a wonderful characteristic that has a lot of fulfilling things that come along with it, but you're not going to move God with it. You're not going to get something out of the ministry other than a free CD or something. And that's just it. I mean, the people who do support and who do give into this effort, as we always call it, are doing it not because they're repaying a debt that they owe me or a debt that they owe God. They're not repaying a debt that they owe this ministry. It is strictly and only because they want other people to hear it because of the impact, just like John. I mean, what an impact this has had in his life. So, but you cannot give people the gospel, which offers them freedom, and not just offers them freedom, introduces them to a freedom that has always been theirs, and has always been there. It's just the understanding of it has been lacking. So, yeah, that's why.
Well, it doesn't, you know, in our culture and in religious circles, numbers are the ones, or is the thing that points to so-called success. And when you have a huge group following you, that's supposed to be the mark that God has blessed your effort, or that God has anointed it or is involved in it. But it seems to be the exact opposite of the truth.
Well, if that were true, then Jesus was the biggest failure in ministry that ever came to this planet. Because what he did and whatever he did, and foretold by the prophets that it would happen this way, Jesus had no followers, Glenn. They all turned, it says that even the disciples themselves, then each of them turned and went his own way. They did not follow Jesus to and through his ordeal of his trial. There was no voice there to speak up for him, and there was no one there for him during his crucifixion. And I mean, I understand why the Catholics would become overly enamored with the person of Mary, because if nothing else, she was a good mama, and that was her son that was there on that cross. And so, yeah, it's really amazing that we look at it that way, as by having followers and numbers, when Jesus himself had no followers, and it led him to an absolutely successful ministry.
Well, and the people that became believers after the resurrection had dramatic encounters, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, however you want to put it, whether it be on the day of Pentecost or Paul being knocked down on the road to Damascus as Saul from Tarsus. These things were not small issues. And, you know, I'm wondering if it takes that kind of dramatic impact on the heart and soul to get somebody to understand that God is not angry with them anymore, that everybody is been righteous. And, you know, I'm wondering the impact or the salvation, initial salvation experience that we had and that people have just gets spoiled by being sucked back into legalism and religion.
Well, it can be, but you see, the degree of salvation and the impact of it on a person's heart is directly correlated to how deeply they are in religion, Glenn. The people who have never been submerged in religious thinking, the impact, the seeming impact of the gospel to every degree that you are not in religion is a degree that the impact of the gospel is probably not going to be as great in those people's lives. I think the reason it's been so great in my life and in your life is that we so followed after our own righteousness in its best pursuit with the threat of hell on our tail. And so the gospel obviously has had very powerful impact on the lives of people who were in that pursuit of self-righteousness, as Paul makes it very clear in his testimony in Philippians chapter 3. And he says that this whole thing for him was the issue of giving up his own righteousness, not giving up his sins, not even giving up murder. You know, Paul never even said that part of his salvation was giving up murder.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that his salvation was giving up his own righteousness. And isn't it amazing, you know, that a man would not even use the fact he was a murderer in his testimony? His testimony is about his own righteousness. And he doesn't say, yes, I was a murderer. He says, I was better than them all. I did it all. I followed the law to its better than anybody that I knew. He didn't say I needed salvation because, you know, I actually went around killing people. He said I needed salvation because I was going around doing it all right and keeping the laws and being the best of the Pharisees that anyone could possibly know. So I think the correlation between the bondage of religion and the impact of salvation are certainly measured very closely together.
Well, we're right up against the clock, and I think we would be remiss not to mention the upcoming Gospel Revolution Convention, which is going to feature an entire teaching on the Book of Hebrews. That's coming up in November, and the information is on the GospelRevolution.com website. And people can also call the office, Michael, for more information and talk to
yes,
you about
they can.
It.
Yes, they can, and we are certainly looking forward to this. The things I'm going through now physically, it's like, yes, let me do this now and get it over with, because 8 or 9 sessions straight through back to back is going to be quite a monumental task. And I just have no doubt, Glenn, it's going to result in a work that will last forever on this planet. I just know it. And I'm looking very much forward to it. I know that it's going to be a tough haul, but but I also know that the end result is going to be just absolutely fantastic, not just for myself, but for those who actually sit through it and those who are have the privilege of listening to that great teacher. Really, we're just all we're going to do is let the teacher that taught it speak instead of trying to get a point across. Just try our best to read it in context and let it speak for itself. That is a big challenge for those of us who've been taught so many of those verses, especially out of Hebrews, out of context, such as it is impossible to renew him again to repentance, and that speaking of the person who has done despite to the spirit of grace and counted the blood of the covenant wherewith we were sanctified as an unholy thing, and that that don't you know that God chastens and scourges everyone that he loveth, and God is chastening and scourging. And you will be absolutely blown away by hearing those and many, many more. In fact, all of the verses that are in the book of Hebrews in its context, it is amazing.
Well, we look forward to that. And also want to let you guys know that next week we're going to have a special Monday night webcast, Glenn Cline Online, coming to you Monday night next week. So make your plans to be with us then. Sean, our producer and engineer, is going to be out of town on our normal Wednesday time, so we're going to have a special Monday night webcast. Take care of business for next week, and then the following week we'll be back to our regular Wednesday night effort here on Glenn Cline Online. Well, Mikey, feel better.
Thank you, Glenn. For the webcast tonight, and I think we had a great time. I know I did.
And we want to thank Sean O'Halloran for pushing all the buttons and taking care of business, and also John Clark for calling us from California. So we're going to talk to you Monday night. Don't forget, and let us hear from you this week at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Also check the website for information about the upcoming Gospel Revolution Convention, the second annual in Houston, Texas in November. Get your information from there, and feel free to call the office for any questions or any information that you need. So until Monday night, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for joining us. This is Glenn Cline Online saying, Shalom, everybody!